And welcome back to Innovation Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Matthew Leonard, the editor of the Innovation Trail, is here. And I hope in the next 18 minutes we do get definitions, Matthew, of penetration testing and fuzzing, because that's what Remy, those were the terms that he dropped. So I do want definitions
maybe
of those.
There are some things you just do not need to know. And that, they may well be two of those things. But we're joined, great to be joined by some people who are actually at the coalface in the hackathon, Tim Duffy and Marissa McDowell. Thanks for coming in, guys. And Remy's still on the line with us from RIT. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So tell us, Marissa, I'd be interested. I specifically was keen to get a woman in here who's involved in the hackathon, because I think a really strong perception around these kinds of events is that it's sort of, you know, kind of like greasy boys, you know, in the labs with pizza boxes, and you know that they're the only people that participate. So just tell us a little bit about, you know, why are you involved in the hackathon? Are you is it something you've been doing for a while, or is this a new kind of experience for you?
Yeah, I've been started coding a couple of years ago and I enjoyed it, so I decided to go to RIT and get my master's in information technology. So I've been working there, and getting exposed to these kind of projects has been really fun. There is a lot of pizza boxes and guys around, though.
Is that a good or a bad thing? You know. So tell us about your particular project that you're working on in the hackathon.
I'm working on CityWisk, and CityWisk is a platform that we're trying to build to bring people to local experiences around. If you have 2 hours and you're in Rochester and don't know what to do, you can open up CityWisk and it'll give you some ideas, take you right to the local favorites.
Okay, so tell us, where are you, what's the kind of the basic information, you know, where are you going to kind of pull in the locations, the kind of ideas that you're going to sort of present to people through the app?
Well, we're going to try and we're working with local businesses, local chambers of commerce and things like that to kind of build a good repertoire of businesses and things that people in Rochester like to do, so that we can use those and share them with people that might be visiting or looking for something new to do for that day that they might not usually think of.
Right. And when you're thinking about the design of your app, so there's the kind of the design aspect, which is how you want it to look and how people are going to use it. And then there's the sort of the coding, the back end of it sort of stuff. So what are the things, just in terms of the design, what do you want the app to be able to do, you know, in terms of how people can use it? Do you want it to be, you know, is it going to have different language accessibility, or is it going to be something that's, just walk us through that idea.
Our main goals are pretty much speed. We want you to open it up, get an itinerary, and have a list of things to do right off the bat. We want it to be simple, so you don't have to work to go through things like Yelp or other websites that might list lots of different things. We want it all right in your hand in as little time as possible, so you can spend your time actually going to those places instead of looking for things to do.
Right, okay. I mean, this is one, Evan, as a local person, I mean, it's one of those things you hear that some people complain there's nothing to do in Rochester, but of course, when you look through the listings, there's always heaps on, and it's sometimes a challenge to kind of pull that together in a live way. I mean, obviously, you can look at community calendars and so on, but this is something that's obviously in real time, constantly updating, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's very clear. Every time I hear about these projects, I'd like to know what Tim's working on.
So I'm working on a project. It's been going on. So I guess, I don't know if Remy talked about this.
Monroe Minutes?
So it's Monroe Minutes, right? But there are two categories in the challenge, right? Existing applications and new applications. So I fall into the existing
one. And Marissa is the new app. Are you a new app or existing app?
We are also an existing app.
Okay. So these are things these ideas that have been bubbling along, and then the framework of the hackathon, I guess, provides the crunch time,
yep,
the deadline to,
yes,
sort of really get
the
done.
Final push to actually get something out the door. So Monroe Minutes is the name of my application, or my contribution to the hackathon, and its goal is to go on to all the different municipality websites in the county and the city, websites in Monroe County, and find all of the meeting minutes that have existed, for whether they're brand new or if they're going back to, you know, many, many years, and then index them, which allows, just like you would use Google, to search those minutes,
right,
for specific keywords.
Right, Remy gave us a bit of an outline of that. Just tell us about the challenge of actually finding that. I mean, when you started on the project, how kind of deep, And I know you've developed tools for this as well. How deep did you have to kind of drill down into some of the municipal websites to actually get the raw material?
Right. I started the idea, or the idea came to me in August of 2012, and I thought it was going to be like a weekend project. And I realized very, very quickly that every single website is different. Every website, how they describe minutes is different, right? There's no consistency at all. So now you get into how do you come up with a generic enough model to describe what is a meeting minute, you know, across any kind of different entity, whether that's a city or Comita, which is our industrial advisory board, you know, or any other, you know, small village, which, you know, they all have much different objectives and much different you know, things that they're talking about. So it's difficult to match.
And if I can ask, I don't think towns or Comita, for example, are creating minutes online in a very dense, opaque manner just because they want to. I think it's probably just clunkily done at times because the people creating it might not be experienced. But how difficult is it then to actually wade through and get information?
Right. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that you don't really need to know everything that's in the meeting minutes. You're really looking for keywords, right? So Monroe Minutes, after coming up with the idea, was also presented in a conference that we were at in Syracuse for Hex Hackers, Syracuse and Hex Hacks Rochester, was how do I search for the word fracking in every single town meeting minutes for all of upstate New York, which is an incredibly difficult problem to do. And Monroe Minutes kind of took a different direction and said, well, let's make the technology so it's scalable enough and powerful enough to be able to do that. So you're not really looking for did someone say this phrase or did someone talk about this particular topic. You're looking for keywords, things like fracking or casino in the sense of Henrietta now.
Right. So tell us, I just want to bring Remy in here because I know Remy in another life, you had some experience in the world of political lobbying. And Remy, I'm just wondering, Evan made the comment that, you know, perhaps some of these documents are kind of opaque or just kind of incompetently put together. I'm just wondering, I know we've talked about this in other discussions, that there's actually been a bit of a trend, despite the rhetoric around open government, that a lot of government agencies are actually have actually been putting information out there in a way that's introduced some hurdles to how people can access it. You know, things are put out as PDFs rather than Excel spreadsheets, for example, to give an example. Is that something you've observed trying to kind of mine for information?
Well, it depends on the agency and it depends on the level. Right. I know that at the state level, I've been very happy with the efforts of the New York State Senate and their open legislation program to provide things. And really, it's a manpower issue. It's hard because these technologies are new, they're difficult to train for, and they are constantly changing. And the demands of government and municipal employees are to provide service. And this is a lot about capacity building, which is exactly why these events exist, so that we can go to the municipal workers who are collecting this data diligently and doing what they can to provide services, and we can say, hey, we're here to help to make it a little easier, to help make the transition. And the idea is this will feed into a new economy and the growing demand for technologists and coders that need to help businesses, universities, and governments transition from, you know, to a digital and a mobile technology. That's exactly why this event exists.
Well, look, I was trying not to ascribe a motive to the opacity of some of these. you know, truly, I think most of them are probably just sort of clunkily put together. But it's a fair point to say that they may meet some sort of minimum requirement to post information or post minutes, et cetera, in a way that they know is very difficult to sort through. And it's sort of a tangential example, but you know, it was back in 2006 that I wanted to report on a congressional delegation trip to Brazil. Our congressman from the Southern Tier, essentially Tom Reed's seat now, was Randy Cool, and he traveled with a CODEL to Brazil. They stayed at rather lavish places, and they did about 4 hours of actual work in 6 days, and I just wanted to know what it cost. And getting the information, which is supposed to be easy, was remarkably difficult and finally involved. I mean, it felt like going back to the world of dot matrix printing and whatnot. It finally involved someone on the phone in Washington tell me that you had to stop it in person and make a copy in their copy machine by hand, which was just the most silly thing that you can imagine. Now, hopefully 8 years later, that's not the case anymore. But Remy, is it fair to say that innovations like this that come from civic hackathons are going to remedy that for taxpayers and for citizens?
I think that's exactly what we need to bring the bottom-up demand that keeps folks accountable for these types of things. Now, I'm not looking to paint an entirely rosy picture. This has been something the open government movement has been moving and cranking back since, you know, it was called the good government. You know, technology just happened to be on top of it to facilitate that. And as people come forth and they provide these new technologies and these new methods for interfacing with government, that's when we'll see the data sets become more available and we'll see a more participatory government. You know, I'm no stranger to giant, you know, 48-column spreadsheets that have, you know, debits and credits mixed together with a transaction code that mixes them together in a language that makes it impossible to grok. I mean, that's really the case with data sets like the New York State Campaign Finance Database. That is a very difficult database. Even as a hacker or a developer, it's one thing to put that information together, and it's another thing to translate what that spec sheet looks like and turn those abbreviations and codes into things that make sense in a political way. And that's exactly why groups like Hacks and Hackers are so important, because journalists and political analysts and investigative journalists can come together with subject matter, and they can go with technologists to build things that make sense from both angles. And that's the sad state, is that not everything is open yet. And as we do more of these contests, I think we'll see more and more progress.
Right. Hey, just moving on to just talking a little bit more about the economy of this. And Marissa, just back to you, I guess. Do you are you doing this purely out of, you know, this altruistic, you know, spirit of open data and open government? I mean, you know, are you sort of driven by, I guess, kind of community values and that kind of thing? Or are you seeing that potentially, is this also a place where you develop some skills that are going to help you in the job market? They're going to, you know, potentially you could work on something later that is a sort of a monetized model of this. Just tell us a little bit about, you know, what your kind of motivations are, I guess.
There's
if you
definitely
mind.
All of those motivations, I would think. We are really concentrating on collecting a lot of data as we build this. So we want to track where people come from, where are they going to, and be able to store all that data and use that later down the road to facilitate other projects that might come about and things like that. We're also trying to use a lot of open data that is already available, such as activities, walking trails, things like that, that people might not think of to do on an afternoon when they have some free time. And we're going through those databases looking for things like that to add to ours. And then it is a great opportunity to learn lots of different technologies and be able to use that down the road in other opportunities.
Yeah. So, and what about the agencies that you're approaching? I assume they're kind of all over you, you know, saying, oh, yeah, we love the idea. And here's, you know, I mean, is that generally the response that you're getting from the...
Yeah, we're getting a lot of excitement from things like the Pittsburgh Chamber of Commerce is one of the organizations that we've talked to, and they're pretty excited to be able to kind of provide some more benefits to their members that right now they may not have as many benefits as they would like to. So that's an opportunity for us down the road.
Right. And just in terms of accessibility, we talked a bit about how's this going to end up, the product that you're going to have? Is it something that people have to have a smartphone for, or can they, you know, right. is it something that's really just geared to mobile? I guess mobile,
right.
People with mobile technology.
Yeah, we're developing now for Android platforms, so that'll be the first release, and then later down the road we're going to get to the iPhone as well. But it'll be primarily a smartphone application, and then we want to, another step would be to have a web interface as well, but that's obviously another step.
Sort of another thing further down. So.
Right.
So, Tim, I guess in terms of you mentioned the Munro Minutes, have you seen, observes, got a sense of some of the other projects that are coming through the hackathon as well?
Yeah, so there's a lot of really good ones that I'm excited to see, you know, where they're able to get to. And, you know, 2 months is not a really long period of time, you know,
yeah,
to accomplish something. There's another program that's going on for the public market, where they want to make a tool that allows, it's essentially Twitter as the back end, but makes this very beautiful front end that takes merchants sending very, very simple tweets at any point during the day and overlaying that on location information on where the public market they are and what they're selling or what their, you know, sales are and things like that. So I think that's going to be a really, really slick interface, and looks like they're moving, you know, quickly in the right direction. And the neat thing, too, is, right, it's all open source. It's all an MIT license, which means that anyone can pick it up and then use that in their town or in their city and deploy it.
Right, because this I was going to ask you. So first of all, I can see it's going to be great, you know, when the weather's cold, you don't have to do the entire length of the open shed to get your bok choy, right? Because you're going to know exactly which stall to go to. But in terms of how these projects then kind of have another life in other communities, is that definitely, you know, that's definitely another dimension to them.
Absolutely, right? I mean, there's for Monroe Minutes and for, you know, all of these projects, right, that are on the OSI.
What's the OSI?
Open Source Initiative, right? So it's
Thank
an approved
you.
List of licenses that your code can be under. And, you know, with Monroe Minutes, it's not just Monroe County. It can be any county. It could be any state. It could be any institution, right? You could – even private industries can take it and use it internally if they'd want to, if they're looking to, you know, index very, very large amounts of data.
Right.
Tim and Marissa, thank you for taking the time. And Remy, I'm sure since you're only halfway through the Civic Hackathon, we're going to have more to talk about. But thank you as well for taking the time, Remy.
Yeah, if folks are interested, they can go to attrock.hackupstate.com. The contest is not over yet. There's still plenty of time to get involved.
And by the way, Matthew Leonard, I have three definitions for you. A penetration test, mind out of the gutter, please, or pen test, as they call it. It's an attack on a computer system with the intention of finding security weaknesses. Fuzzing, or fuzz testing, is a software testing technique, often automated or semi-automated. And the term grok that we heard Remy use actually goes back to a 1961 novel, Stranger in a Strange Land. It just means to thoroughly understand. How'd I do, Remy?
Excellent. Spot on.
Very good.
Thank you for that. And it's been great to talk about the hackathon. More information at innovationtrail.org.
Yeah, we're going to grok a lot more in the next hour. Stay with us.